first successful birth of a test tube baby, Louise Brown, occurred in 1978. And Robert G. Edwards, the physiologist who developed the treatment, was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology of Medicine in 2010. More than 30 years since this first birth, there have been many advances in assisted reproduction, and in 2009 alone it was reported that these procedures resulted in almost 46,000 live births and 60,000 infants in the United States. Joining us this morning to share his perspective on these procedures and some new advances in this field is Dr. Shaki Badaway, professor of obstetrics and gynecology and pathology and the director of reproductive endocrinology and infertility at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Badaway. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first, let's talk about when we say assisted reproduction, what exactly are we talking about?
Yes, assisted reproduction is a group of technologies that has been introduced to help the infertile couple achieve pregnancy. They have been trying other methods like induction of ovulation, etc., and they could not get pregnant. So we resort to assisted reproduction. One of the early methods of assisted reproduction is insemination, what we call intrauterine insemination. In this technology, the woman is given medications to stimulate the ovaries to get more eggs than normal. That's increasing her chance of getting pregnant when you have more than one egg. Secondly, to take the sperm of her male partner and wash that sperm by a technique in the laboratory, in the andrology laboratory, where the sperm is washed with a culture medium to help capacitation of the sperm, to help that sperm to fertilize. And thus, we take the washed sperm and put it in a tiny catheter injected in the uterus around the time of ovulation. And therefore, you get about 35 to 45% pregnancy rate within 2 to 3 cycles.
Wow. And that's the first kind of line of defense, so to speak, or the first line of offense. That's the first thing you might do.
That's the first line which should be done, and we do that provided that the patient herself has her tubes tested and find to be open and has ovaries that could respond to the medication that we give to produce more oocytes or eggs.
Okay, and if that then fails, where do you go next?
Then we sit with the couple and we tell them the next method, assisted reproduction, will be in vitro fertilization. In vitro fertilization means stimulation of the ovaries to produce more eggs, extract these ovaries once they have reached maturity.
The eggs, you extract the eggs.
And then after that, fertilize them in the IVF laboratory. There is a specialist there, a biologist or an embryologist, who is highly trained and well experienced in the various methods of fertilization of those eggs.
That's hence the term test tube baby. In other words, the process of the egg and sperm coming together takes place in the lab.
In the lab, in a petri dish.
In a petri dish.
The laboratory is attached to the operating room so that there is no time spent in transferring those eggs after being extracted to the embryologist so that the process starts right away by identification of the eggs, whether they are mature or immature. The mature eggs could be fertilized right away. The immature, they are incubated in the lab to mature and then they are fertilized.
So it's possible that if a woman produces, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 eggs, let's just say, you will decide which of those are immediately fertilizable and the others you might allow to mature. So by the end of that process, you could have several embryos. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And that's the whole idea, to have several embryos. Why? Because you are going to transfer few of those and the rest could be frozen to be used by the patient for other cycles if she cannot make it in the first cycle, or if she made it, then in the future she could have some frozen embryos to be used by herself.
Well, I want to talk more about that in a minute, but I want to note for our listeners that you were one of the first people to offer this in Central New York, to offer this whole idea going when did that happen? And tell us a little about
that. That's right. We were the first people to develop the concept of reproductive endocrinology and infertility. It started in 75. Then the in vitro program in the United States started in 1982 in Virginia, then Norfolk, Virginia. We started here in 1985 by a small program to offer that to the population, and now we have established a program in the 2000 up till now with all the advances in the technology related to fertilization.
Well, I want to talk a lot more about that in a minute, but I just want to know, it sounds like this whole process of in vitro fertilization has changed, and we're going to talk more about that. But has the incidence grown as well? We're running out of time, so the incidence has grown. I mean, more and more people are using these techniques.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Why do you think?
Well, you have 20-25% of the population are infertile. You could use many methods and help about 50% of those. The other 50% could benefit from assisted reproduction.
Right. But the point is, do you think things like the fact that women have put off having babies till they're later, and there's so you have older mothers, play a role in why that's necessary?
That is correct. Nowadays, people are trying to enhance their career. They delay having babies, and therefore they are faced with the biological clock.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, because we'll be right back with more from Dr. Badaway right after this short break. So please stay with us. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with Dr. Shaki Badaway. And we're talking about assisted reproduction and in vitro fertilization, which is one method of assisted reproduction. So before the break, we were talking about how these procedures, that they have improved and that they're being used more readily. Tell us about it. What has changed in terms of in vitro fertilization?
Yes. Edwards and Steptoe, when they started the program, they depended on the natural cycle and having one egg taken out and fertilized. So they have one embryo. It was realized that it's better to do controlled ovarian stimulation and then get more eggs per cycle. Therefore, you have more embryos, which allows us to transfer more than one embryo in certain situations, like patients above the age of 35 or 40. They might need more than one embryo to be transferred in order to enhance the pregnancy rate. That's one advance that happened. The other advance that happened is in the process of fertilization itself in the laboratory. You could depend on natural fertilization, means putting the egg with a certain number of sperm, 50,000 or 100,000 sperm around the egg, and wait and see that natural fertilization occurs. However, that might be the cause of infertility, that the sperm cannot penetrate the zona, which is the capsule, because the zona is hardened. As we grow older, that zona hardens and therefore makes it difficult. In the early 90s, a Belgian scientist introduced the principle of ICSI, which is intracytoplasmic sperm injection. And since that time, that technique has been used, and we have been using it, and fertilization rate is almost 100%.
Oh, my goodness, that's extraordinary.
Almost 100%. And therefore, you develop embryos, and these embryos are as good as embryos from natural fertilization.
That's wonderful.
There is no increase in abnormalities. There is no increase in miscarriage rate or anything related to this technology.
That was going to be my next question. Was there any change with these advances? Are there any more risks associated?
No risk at all.
I had read something somewhere about, so there's no higher risk of cancer, there's no higher risk of birth defects that has come forward.
There was a paper published some time ago, maybe 20 years ago, about induction of ovulation using medications to stimulate the ovary, that these patients might be liable to increase ovarian cancer. All the studies that came after that from both sides of the Atlantic, both the United States as well as Europe and the Middle East, found that there is no increase at all.
Wow.
In cancer.
That is very reassuring.
It is very reassuring, and we advise the patients with that when they ask, because they read about all these aspects.
So you mentioned that you can produce many mature, out of mature eggs, you can produce several embryos, and you also mentioned that you might put, pending the individual patient, several embryos in. Is there a limit? I mean, I know there's been a lot in the news with the...
Yes.
There's been all that Octomom thing where somebody put in 8 embryos, I mean, and she delivered 8 babies. I mean, I know the chart.
Yes.
So talk about the ethics and some of those issues that you consider when you make those decisions.
The American Society of Reproductive Medicine in the United States put some guidelines. Younger patients less than 35, you could use 1 or 2 embryos. 35 to 40, 2 to 3 embryos. Above 40, maybe 3 embryos. To enhance the pregnancy rate.
The likelihood of becoming pregnant,
exactly.
And having a full term.
Exactly.
Pregnancy.
However, with the putting more embryos, you increase the chance of multiple birth. And we always have to reduce the chance of multiple birth. So we advise the patients that maybe single embryo is better. Of course, the pregnancy rate will be less than 2 embryos or 3 embryos. However, it's the choice of the patient too in this day and age.
Why do you? What's the concern about the multiple births from your standpoint?
Increased miscarriage rate, increase prematurity and premature labor, and these babies could spend long time in incubators and so on. So therefore, we don't wish this to happen. And therefore, we like to reduce as much as possible the incidence of multiple births.
So you mentioned that you will, in terms of the unused embryos, let's say someone, you're able to produce 5, 6, 7 embryos, you then perhaps inseminate with 2 or insert 2, perhaps, and then you've got 4 left. This is just a theoretical case. You said what they do is they'll freeze them for potentially later use by this couple.
Correct.
But there's a lot of ethical issues that come up. If, for example, the couple decides not to use those eggs, those fetuses or those embryos, they're not quite fetuses at that point.
Embryos.
Tell me, what goes on at that point? What happens? Are they used as donors for other infertile couples? Is it used in research? Because that's been, of course, the big concern about stem cell research. What's happening with that?
Well, what's happening is when the couple come in and sign for in vitro fertilization, we sit down with them and we explain the whole process, including the fact that they could have more than 1 embryo, 5 embryos, 10 embryos. After the transfer, there will be some embryos left behind, and we are going to freeze those embryos. And what do they want to do? There is a consent document, and in this consent document, they could say they are going to use them for themselves in future to produce future pregnancies. Or another option they have, they say, well, after a while, we'll think about it, and then maybe we donate it to some of our relatives. We do not have any aspect of research on embryos. Here at Upstate, these are the 2 options they have. And therefore, we offer them the freezing facility.
What's the success rate of taking frozen embryos at a later date and using them again? Is there a big difference between those and the ones that you initially implant?
Yes. Usually when you implant embryos, you look at the whole embryos and you choose for the first time the best-looking embryos. And these are the ones that you give them the first chance for transfer to get a pregnancy. The other embryos, some of them are still good. Some of them might not be the best because they were slowly growing or dividing slowly. So we know that they are not the best.
They're not optimum.
Optimum. But anyway, they have to be frozen and they could function very well. When you get those, some of these embryos out later on in order to implant in a cycle for frozen embryo transfer, you look at the embryos dividing well and so on, therefore they are good for transfer. You could have a pregnancy rate of 50%, 60% with those embryos.
So the other option for a couple like that is even if their frozen embryos don't work, they could go through another IVF cycle, theoretically, and get a fresh batch, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now there's a brand new thing that's happening. It's very exciting news. I understand, talking about the frozen aspect of these embryos, that at one point it wasn't possible to actually freeze the eggs themselves. And I know with recently there's been some change in that. I'd like you to talk about it and who might be the kinds of people who would be, you know, choose that kind of option.
Correct. Before I just answer that, I think the principle of freezing embryos started in the 80s because of the multitudes of embryos are produced, and this has been very successful. However, freezing an egg was extremely difficult because of the constitution of the egg. The egg has lots of fluid in it, and that fluid, when you freeze, it crystallizes, and that destroys the egg. So scientists have been working on this aspect now, and some data are coming out that there are successes in freezing eggs, and there are few hundred pregnancies have been produced or resulted from frozen embryos.
So this is still
eggs.
Very new, very, very
this
new.
This is very new and still under work. It is not for general consumption. There are certain centers here in the United States doing this under control of institutional review boards.
And somebody who might be, let's say, with a diagnosis of cancer or somebody who doesn't plan to get married for another 10 years and they know that their time is running out might choose that option to freeze their eggs.
That will be the value of freezing eggs, especially for the young patients who are cancer patients, chemotherapy, and so on.
Well, we have so much to talk about. We could keep going, but unfortunately, we're running out of time. We do have a program here at Upstate. I know it's a wonderful one, and I want to thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Shaki Badaway, professor of obstetrics and gynecology and pathology, and the director of reproductive endocrinology and infertility at Upstate Medical University. And he's been a local pioneer in this field of assisted reproduction. We'll be right back right after the news with more HealthLink on air. So stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR.